Manx Radio's Countryside is brought to you by NFU Mutual.
Hello and welcome to Last in this current series of Countryside here on Manx Radio. I'm Simon Clark.
And I'm Kerry Kermode. I popped along at Easter weekend to the opening of the farm shop at Glen Helen.
We reminisce about our past experiences with Easter, and also I popped along to the Curragh Wildlife Park. Busy old Easter weekend, Kiri, hasn't it? And the weather got calm eventually, which was nice. She was a bit rough on the end of last week, wasn't it?
We were nearly blown away, yeah. That yellow warning came, but it did go quickly. And I think everybody did have an okay lambing that day. No real disasters, but we're at the mercy of nature, aren't we, all of the time?
But of course, we've spoken about it many times on Countryside, haven't we, about, you know, farms, how they're designed, and the winds we've had over recent times. There always seems to be a lot more of a different direction because, you know, with your farms, our farm buildings, they all sort of, you walked into the old cow houses and the old stable that we had on our place, and they were all on the sheltered side, weren't they?
Very much so.
But obviously we didn't have the big buildings they got today, and they're orientated round a sort of standard southwesterly wind, aren't they? So when you get a lot of these easterlies, it can cause a lot of trouble, and when you got stuck in there, it's it's not as much protection as you'd like to hope, isn't it?
This is it, and it's ever-changing, isn't it? It comes in these big flurries, sort of boom and bust with the weather almost. But the old people, they did have it right. The orientation of the buildings was, you know, in favour of the livestock and looking after them. And obviously, their lambing patterns and their calving patterns were always done by the seasons, and the seasons were a lot more prominent then, I'm led to believe. So now we're sort of, you know, it's very wild, isn't it, almost?
Yeah, that they're overlapping a little bit, aren't they?
But
anyway, enough of that for the time. It's been nice enough the last couple of days, so that's good news there. Good news for Isle of Man producers of local produce, because wonderful opening this weekend in Glen Helen.
That's right. The farm shop, it's been so exciting on the build-up to getting the doors open for Matt Harrison, the owner there. And to see it all come together in all of its glory with over 92 local producers putting their wares into that shop, 100% Manx. I caught up with Matt on the opening day. Now, a few weeks ago when we spoke, there was an awful lot of work to be done, lots of organising, and here we are open when you said we were going to be open.
Well, give or take 2 or 3 days. I'm just going to say it's been blood, sweat and tears, and I am officially a broken man. I don't think I've slept for about 3 or 4 days, but we've done it. We've done it. We've got you guys here tonight. Last night we had all the suppliers in, and we were cleaned out of stock yesterday on our first day, and we had those suppliers come in today and see the shelves empty, and they're going home tonight to switch on their ovens and switch on their kilns and make more things. And that is the power of local. That's the power of a cooperative. They'll do that for us.
And that is it. The passion is showing through. They want it to work. They want to be part of this team. Could you have expected to be this good?
Not in a million years. The support and the genuine love we've felt from all the suppliers and all the customers that have come in. People are coming in and meeting friends. They're standing in the shop and having a chat for, you know, half an hour and having a coffee. It's actually been really lovely. I keep going in the kitchen and bursting into tears.
And that is it. It's that emotion that comes with it. It's finally complete. You know, Easter weekend is here. The weather hasn't been the best, but you know, it's something new, it's something exciting for the island.
It doesn't matter, we're Manx. Well, I'm not. I'm honorary Manx, I'd like to think now, but we're Manx. We don't worry about a bit of rain. People are coming down and they're coming into shelter and having a coffee and having a shop.
And what is your favourite part?
I think it's the people. I think genuinely, I mean, the product is fantastic and I adore it, but the people that have come in and the things they've been saying, and I hear them walking out of the shop saying they've come in and they've gone, actually, that's really nice, and we're going to come back, and there's a really good mix of product, and it's at a decent price. We're not overcharging. Our pricing's the same as anywhere else on the island, because that's a thing for me. I don't like being overpriced. Everybody's just having a nice time, and that's just a nice thing.
And there's more to add to this. Obviously, now we've got the suppliers in, the fridges are full, the shelves look amazing. What else is to come?
Oh, I've barely started. I barely start. I don't stop, as you'll see from all of the other Facebook videos and everything else we've done with yourselves. I don't stop. We've got cinema nights coming. We've got butchery nights coming. We've got celebrity chefs coming. We've got Brian and Michael are doing the glamping pods coming. It's not going to stop.
It's so exciting. Well done. Congratulations. And now you can rest a little.
Well, I'm hoping to go to sleep for about a week, but thank you.
Well, Carol Kenyuk, you're a very busy lady. I normally see you at the Royal Manx show, but not much difference. This is all Manx, wholeheartedly Manx, and that's what the Royal Show is about. This the same.
It's a dream that's come true for Matt. It's nothing to do with me. I just happen to work there. As most people know, my farmer's daughter, born and bred. I know the issues on the route to market. This is just giving an opportunity now that isn't available. I'm not going to go on my soapbox much longer because I could go on for hours and hours, but it's lovely. We can have the bigger producers, the smaller producers. The plan is to rotate producers, even within the deli, within the boutique area. Everybody will get a chance at showing their displays here at Swiss Chalet.
And it looks absolutely spectacular. This opening weekend, you know, it's been inundated with people from all walks of life. The shelves are emptying.
Thank you. It's actually quite a nice problem to have, but maybe not on Easter Saturday. It's not the best problem to have. People have just supported us. The Swiss Chalet has always been a very bespoke building, and Matt has very much kept the same character. And it's quite a special feel and a vibe when you walk into the place. We want to extend this, and we're not in competition with anybody. We are here to complement the other people that are doing very, very similar to us around the Isle of Man.
And what is your favourite part of the outlet?
I think I would have to go down, I'm going to have to go down the fresh veg and the meat, the route to market for the farmer.
Well, here I'm joined with Steve Tate. Steve, what an array of meat you've got here in this counter. This farm shop has been so much passion and energy put into it. And I know how passionate and how much energy you have with Tate's Butchers in Peel. How are you going to juggle the two?
Well, I will manage it. You know, I've got the wife down here and I've got a great crew in the shop. And you know for a fact, I love what I do. It's not going to be easy, but it's great. It's a challenge and I love a challenge. You know that, Kiri.
The array of meat you've got on display is absolutely incredible. It just showcases the best of Manx.
Well, the Manx produce over here is fantastic. We don't need to bring stuff in. It's on the island, always has been. You just got to get it, really. And yeah, that's the problem we have, you know.
But you've got, like you say, you've got beef, there's lamb, pork, sausages, all homemade?
Everything's homemade. You know me. Very passionate, trying to find new ways of bringing new things to the island, you know what I mean? And it's a different, and what Matt's doing here is just amazing. And I just hope the people of the island really realise what they've got here. They've got something very, very special, you know what I mean? And it's lovely to be part of it. And seeing everybody coming together, I just hope the Manx people support him, you know?
And what's it mean to you to see the people coming in and buying the products off your shelves?
Well, you can see the smile on my face. It's not about the money, it's about the quality. And the island produced some of the... it's a pleasure to put a knife to it. It really is. And, yeah, it's... I don't know, I'm very... You know me, Kira, I'm very passionate. I'm not good with a microphone, but I'm good with a knife. You know what I mean?
And that's it. You've always strived for quality. What do you make of the, you know, the dry aging, you know, the hanging process and all of that to make the quality meat? Does much have to be done with Manx products?
No, stick it on a hook and dry it. I don't need a cabinet. Old school works, and that's how I find. And you know me, I am old school. Yeah, you can hang stuff for 28 days, 30 days, but it's hard. Everything needs to be hung, except for chicken and poultry. Lamb, pork not so much, but beef, yeah, definitely. But no, when you see the look on people's faces when they come back and they say how nice it is, and it's old school. You don't need to wrap it in cling film, you know, just put it out there.
And what is your favourite cut? What would be, you know, are you into the Angus, the Wagyu? What's your favourite?
I love Aberdeen Angus. Grass-fed beef is the best. What goes into an animal makes it. Lamb, I feel, should be fed on seaweed. It's a free product. And what it does to the animal, it cures it from the inside out. The flavour is just amazing. Pigs, acorn and crab apples.
No way.
Yeah, seriously. But my favourite cut of beef is ribeye steak cooked with marrowbone. You get the marrow bone, it all comes together. It's an amazing flavour. Dribble it on when you've done it. Don't overcook it. Don't kill it. I've done that.
But people don't like fat.
No, cook it with the fat because it will dry out. Then take the fat out. Don't take it out before you've done it because you're not appreciating the full flavour. Because it's where it is. And the lamb has to have fat. You get a nice saddle of lamb or a nice shoulder. Shoulder to me is the best cut ever, even with pork. I don't sell many legs of pork because no one wants just lean, lean meat. You've got to have that flavour and it comes through. You know what I mean? But yeah, give me grass-fed beef all day. And I see him roaming around the hills and I'm like, I'm going to take a knife to that. You know what I mean?
Well, that is that passion. How long have you been a butcher, Steve?
I start when I was 12 years old. I'm now 64 and I love every minute of it. I love listening to the feedback. I love working with youngsters. I have vets come in my shop, young girls that want to be vets and boys, and they're going, what do I look for? So I'll get the organs in and I'll go through the heart, the liver, the lungs, and I'll work with that. You know, what's important, it's not just about the meat side of it. It's about people. You've got to teach people. In my trade, people eat with their eyes. You have a mouth to eat with. Just close your eyes and enjoy it. There's some great chefs on this island. They know what to do with this meat. And Matt certainly knows what to do down here. And Will in the calf, well, you know, all my burgers, all handmade, sausages, I do everything. Yeah. Crab, sweet chili, smoked salmon with lemon. It goes in the sausages. There's not much I can't do. Give me some bunnies and I'll put you a burger together, you know? It's Easter.
So you're excited for the future of the farm shop?
Who wouldn't be? Come on, it's great. Someone's come over here and gone, look, this is what you've got. Let's put it out there. And I hope you Manx, if you're listening to this, should be proud of what Matt's trying to do. It's just amazing. And he's so passionate. And it's hard to find that passion. And when you get that feedback, and then I've been down here and I'm meeting all the customers and that, it's lovely to hear. It's a breath of fresh air. Supermarkets, no. Come on, please. You know, we don't need supermarkets. You've got brilliant butchers on this island. And the quality of meat is absolutely fantastic. It really, really is. And I take my hat off to all the farmers. They do a top, top job. It's just getting hold of it.
There we go. That was the supplier, Steve Tate, from Tate's Butchers, Carol Kenyuk and Matt Harrison, the owner of the Isle of Man Farm Shop.
Yeah, and you must get there for a look around because they really have done a spectacular job. I know that we featured a few weeks ago on Countryside when there was nowhere near the state it's in now. And to see everyone in there, the local producers were there on the Friday, I think it was, and then the official opening on the Saturday where the general public were there. It's just great to see everything. And everything labelled up. Who's it from? Who's supplying it? And not just food. Loads of Manx crafts and everything you could imagine. The Manx tie. Must get a new one of them. I don't know what happened to my old one.
Well, we'll never ask about that one. But no, it is wonderful to see. You know, it is a 100% Manx. It's a route to market for many small businesses. And I think that's the important bit, is having somewhere where these people can sell their wares.
Well, did you get out rolling your Easter eggs yesterday?
No, we haven't done anything this year, actually. But that said, I really, really enjoyed Easter as a child growing up on the farm. We used to go out and collect the gorse flowers to make the yellow stain and then put the egg in it and boil the egg to make the yellow shell. It was just great memories growing up on the farm and then go to the steepest bit and it smashed for 1,000 bits.
Did you ever get the yellow stuff washed out of the pot?
I think it stained everything else stronger than it did the actual eggshell.
Yeah, I took the wife not long after we met. We made the eggs and she said, oh, we need a good hill to roll them down. We went once out the airs to roll them down And then that was a bit bland.
Oh, okay.
The next year, Primrose Hill. Do you know how steep that is?
That's a shocker, Primrose.
Yeah,
oh, wow, so, there'd be no egg left.
Well, one of them's still on the missing list. Could have landed the other side of the road or something like that. But it is sort of a tradition. It's great that the tradition down Craignish happened as well, you know, where for all ages, there's just something about it. School kids always do it, isn't it? And the picture of all them decorated eggs.
This is it. And with all the arts and crafts materials they have now, glitter and glue guns and all sorts, they can make them real fancy. It's nice to see the tradition of the Easter bonnet as well. You know, making something with the straw hat and the little chicks. And yeah, it's nice Easter.
What's happened to the sticky back plastic in them days? You're listening to Countryside here on Manx Radio with Kiri Kermode and myself, Simon Clark. Well, it's that time of year where now the wildlife park at the Curragh at Balaff is now open. And to find out if the Easter period had lived up to its reputation, I spoke to the general manager, Kathleen Graham. Well, firstly, how has the Easter been? It's a bit of a mixed bag of weather.
Yeah, I mean, we've had quite a lot of stormy and wet weather, haven't we, really, from the start of the year. But certainly the Easter weekend, it wasn't so great on the Friday and the Saturday, but Sunday and certainly the Monday was our busiest day. Yesterday, the car park was full.
Yeah, and Easter, is that one of the busiest times in general for you? The kids are off now for a good bit.
Yeah, it can be. The 2 weeks of Easter, if the weather plays ball, then it can be our busiest 2 weeks of the year. And certainly I think there's something about springtime and the summer and Easter and eggs and that makes you think of the wildlife park and all the life and that goes on here. So it's certainly we're in people's minds, I think, at Easter as a kind of must visit.
Well, of course, opened full time for this season, in February. I mean, how has it gone? What's changed since the last time we spoke?
The weather's very wet.
Yeah, there was a lot of millimetres or inches, whichever way you look at it, of rain. And obviously, you're a wetland. Coped okay, didn't need to build an ark?
Well, it's funny enough that the park here does cope with flooding quite well because it is a wetland, and that's what wetlands are designed to do. A lot of people don't realise just how important they are in absorbing all the excess rainwater comes down off the mountains there, and it's like a big sponge that we're on here, the park and the Balaff Curraghs, and it soaks up the water very well. But there's been a lot of surface water as well this year. But it's funny because one of the main campaigns that we're involved with for this year and next year is Wetlands for Life, and all the EASA, that's the European Association of Zoos and Aquaria Zoos, are involved in really highlighting just how important wetlands are. Wetlands are not just important for species, about 40% of animal species are wetland species, but also for humans, you know, for recreation, for soaking up rainwater, which is ever more important with climate change. And we're seeing, you know, periods where we're having a lot of rain in one go. So wetlands are not just, you know, we think of the Curraghs here, this is a wetland, but any coastal habitat is a wetland. Glens, rivers, lakes, marshy areas. So wetlands are hugely diverse. They're diverse for species, they are diverse for the way that man uses them. So they're really, really important that we protect them. And being part of the campaign here, our conservation fund helps raise money for habitats, not just the species that we keep here. You know, we help red pandas in Nepal, and we've helped penguins off the coast of Chile and Peru, but we've also helped our native wetlands here in the Isle of Man. So we've got a memorandum of understanding with Manx Wildlife Trust, and we help support Barn Owls, but we've also helped support the Shearwater Project, and we've also helped Manx Birdlife with the Ayres Reserve there. So when you're visiting the park, you're also not just helping species worldwide, but you're helping species and habitats here in the Isle of Man. So yes, it's been very, very wet.
That's a good answer to the question there. But in all, obviously in your previous roles and maybe in this role, do you ever get the chance to go to somewhere that runs a similar park to this in a wetland, and how do they differ?
We're quite unique. This wildlife park is unique. I think a lot of people don't quite realise that in the Isle of Man, that to actually have what they call a Ramsar site, that's the wetland of scientific interest within the park. So our nature trail area falls within the Ramsar site. That's quite unusual. Not many wildlife parks actually have such a prestigious wetland within their boundary. And I think as well, you know, we're working with Manx Wildlife Trust and Bird Aid as well to kind of highlight not just our park, but actually the Isle of Man, two other EASA zoos and around the world, just what important wetland habitats are here on the Isle of Man. So yeah, it's quite unusual. I do visit a lot of zoos. I am quite involved in the zoo community in terms of accreditation and things. That's really ramping up now. I work voluntarily in my holiday time helping out with that. But yeah, so we are quite an unusual park.
Do other places who get new species in maybe find that they can't adapt to theirs and get in touch and say, oh, these species or animals would like a bit of a wetter ground? Does that happen?
Well, you do have to consider, you know, what your ground is, how many visitors you can attract, what your needs are. And our needs are quite unique in terms of providing a place for education, recreation, conservation on here in the Isle of Man, and serve the population first and foremost, the people here who live in the Isle of Man. So we do have to consider what species are suitable for our park. And actually primate arboreal species are quite suitable because they often keep high off the ground, which is quite good if you've got a lot of flooding. And obviously there's species that are not realistic for us, some of the larger species that you need really a huge amount of visitors to support that species. But we can have a lot of small, very interesting and endangered species here. And also we're lucky that we can have them so close to the public. I think our public are well behaved compared to some areas. We don't have some of the predators like foxes, that you maybe have to improve your fence. And so we can have that kind of really close to nature experience here. So yeah, it's quite it's a great thing to have here to be able to provide that for people in the Isle of Man.
So what other new ones have you got in, or what have you got planned, the hoping you're going to get your hands on?
I mean, certainly, you know, I touched on accreditation. And, you know, we were last accredited by EASA in 2016, our accreditation's due next year. BEASA, we're also members of the British and Irish Association, and they doing accreditations as well. So the standards are higher and higher. And within the British Isles, the Zoo Licensing Act, although we don't directly sit under it here in the Isle of Man, we still have to have higher than those standards to be members of EASA and BEASA. So therefore, we have to keep up with UK standards of husbandry, conservation, education for zoos. But it's the highest really in the world. It's the strictest zoo licensing, which is something to be proud of, that we can say we really, really have fantastic zoos in the British Isles, and they're doing a lot of good work, conservation work. Yes, we need to develop, and we need to keep up those standards. So it can be challenging. I think, you know, we all know the Isle of Man is quite a small space. We have a low population, and we have high expectations for what we can provide. But we need to focus mostly on species that are that we can keep well. So that does mean that we have to think about the finance, how much they cost effectively to run. Now, we don't buy or sell animals, but obviously when it comes to feeding them, their housing requirements, staff time, things like that, that all has a cost So we have to be careful about the species that we pick. And obviously we do need money to develop and keep standards up. But I have been working on a few animal moves because we have to move them around within the breeding programme. For example, for a while we have been a non-breeding collection for red pandas. We've had mum and two daughters here for some time since our famous resident Kush passed away. One of our cubs last year went off to the Cotswolds Wildlife Parks. She's been paired with a male down there. And we've to bring in a male from Madrid called Malik. So I've been working on that, and that's quite challenging post-Brexit, doing all the paperwork and making sure that it all matches up. So we're hoping to have him at the park quite soon. So that'll be nice. He'll be going with Sarah. And maybe next year we might have some red panda cubs, so that'll be good. A lot of people will have seen the little piece that was on the One Show about Finlow and the Gibbon family. And that's been challenging because there's only 11 zoos within the breeding programme that have that species of gibbon. We had hoped that Finlow might be going out to Java to the project that we support out there, the Aspinall project. We've donated funds and for that project. But six from the Howlets went out to Java. He wasn't selected. He's been selected to be paired with a really important female for the breeding programme who's in Dubai. And I'd been working on that move and it had been really challenging. And Amy Beckett, Chief Vet, had done quite a lot of work as well with the Dubai government, well, with the United Arab Emirates government, in terms of matching up the paperwork, because we had to have an agreement between their government, our government. And we kind of almost got there, and we had some health screening tests. We had to find labs. We couldn't find a lab in the UK that could do them. We found one in Germany. So you've got all these things going on, and we're just about there, and Finlow's been separate from the family group, and we've had to manage him separately within the house, so that's been tricky. And we just about got there and thought, okay, that's great, we're ready to make this move happen to Dubai. And
look what's happened over there.
Yeah. So we've had to put a pause on that, and we'll have to wait and see, you know, how the situation is. Hopefully things will calm down. I've been speaking to Scott, who's the curator out in Dubai. And he says, it's kind of a bit like normal life. We're still shopping and things, but it's just not really right to send them out there at the moment until we see that things are a bit more settled and secure there. So that's quite difficult. We're having to manage with him in the house, but separate from his other family. So we have to shift them around and make sure that they're never in together. Because he's now been rejected from his family group. It's time for him to leave home, and that's what would happen in the wild when they get to that age of about 8, 9, that really they say, no, enough's enough, away you go. So that's quite challenging. We've had a new emu just arrive, and we've also had a new male capybara who came from Dartmoor Zoo, so we're just in the process of introducing him to our females. So that will be really nice. With fingers crossed, we might have some capybara babies later in the year. We'll see.
So when you look and walk around this park, as enjoyable as it is, there's a lot more that goes on and off the Isle of Man than people realise.
Yeah, and you know, we're in a huge network. We work together. I've never known any industry like the zoo industry in terms of how it's coordinated, the breeding programmes, how that's connected to conservation work in the field. It's just, there's so many inspiring people that work in this field and do some fantastic work. I mean, a third of all the really good conservation projects, a third of the money comes from zoos now, and there's some amazing projects. And our little park in the Isle of Man, actually, considering our low footfall and income compared to some much larger zoos in the UK, we actually managed to gain quite a bit of funds through people who do their voluntary donation. When you come into the park, you're paying £1 unless you opt out. Vast majority of people don't opt out, which is fantastic, because that goes into our conservation fund. And as I said, about 25 to 30% of that is spent on projects on the Isle of Man. But also, of course, we have to support the species that we keep. So red pandas, Humboldt penguins out in the wild, they've all benefited. Tapirs in the Pantanal have benefited because we are one planet and we're all breathing the same air. And we're all dependent on species. So we can't just think locally. Yes, we need to look after our wildlife here locally first, but we also need to think planet-wide. Things like the Red Panda Project that we've helped support, it was to plant more trees to connect fragmented panda habitats. But by planting trees in Nepal, that's also helping combat climate change. So it's a win-win, really, because we are all breathing the same air. So we do need to think of these things. So by helping species, we're also actually helping the planet. And I think when people are able to come to the park, they're able to contribute to the conservation fund, they're able to volunteer. Maybe we've got corporates doing corporate Make a Difference days. All these things feed in to making a difference. And I think too often we think, what can little me do? I can't make much of an impact. But actually you can, just by doing your little bit, just by even visiting the park, that is doing something to help. And it's all these people who make the park and help contribute that it's just a great thing to be involved in.
Kathleen Graham from the Wildlife Park, and it's I haven't been this year yet, Kiri.
I know, the year's tramping on, and we've done very little, haven't we, I suppose?
Yeah, and it's wonderful. I always love walking around there. And I think, to me, it's not just the animals that's there. I mean, the kids love the animals. They're up there and all, you know, there's everything for them now, the little diggers and the bouncy castle and stuff. But I just love that walk around the peaceful bits where the plants are coming around. You go over the little bridges and over the little swampy bits.
That's it, the Curragh, the proper old bog, isn't it? And how the Isle of Man forms. It's nice that they can use a piece of landscape like that, you know, for a use of all of the nature. And like you say, it's so peaceful there. But I think they're doing a great job with their breeding programmes, as Kathleen mentions. It has been a very successful park over the years. And to see it now with all its new signage and, you know, accessible for everyone, I think it's a really nice place to go for a good day out.
Yeah, and even the visitors, you know, that come over to the Isle of Man, when they talk about zoos and things like that, we may not have giraffes and elephants. They'd sink in that park. But when the people come over here, they just say how different it is to walk around. It's not as commercialised as a lot of them, and you're just free to roam, and it's just nice, like we were saying, nice and peaceful.
It is so peaceful, and the animals seem so happy there. You know, the silvery gibbons, they've done so well over the years, and the red pandas. It's something special that we're very proud of as islanders, and hopefully, like you say, the visitors can take something away from it. But long may it continue, the good work they're doing.
Indeed. Anyway, that's it for this series of Countryside. We'll be back in a couple of months' time with our next series. So until then, from me, Simon Clark.
And me, Kiri Kermode.
Don't forget, you can download or subscribe to the podcast for free at manxradio.com. And you can listen to all of the Countryside episodes on our Listen Again feature. Just download the podcast and we'll be back for the next series in a couple of months' time. So until then, from me, Simon Clark.
And me, Kiri Kermode.
See you then. Ta-da.
Bye-bye.